Alan Kring Productions presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, academic lectures in business and economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 4, for Spring Semester 2019. Lecture 5, delivered on February 4, 2019. The title of this lecture is Cash Flow.
Tonight, cash flow analysis. And I've said this on a number of occasions, of course, that accounting doesn't give us what we really need. Accounting gives us numbers that can be right, can be helpful. We use those numbers all the time. But we also have to be cautioned that the numbers that accountants give us don't tell us the whole story, and in a lot of important ways, don't tell us the real story, the truth. Now, that doesn't mean that finance is finding the truth, but we are trying our best to take out the parts of accounting numbers, those accounting numbers and the calculations that are misleading us or not giving us everything we need to know. Specifically, if I were to, well, let me do something real quick here. Let me look at a company like this one, Caterpillar, CAT, C-A-T. One thing is definite on this. We see a high beta, low P-E ratio, which those are contradictory, but the beta is going to be the one that we should pay attention to. Keep in mind, we remember, and I want you to remember, this dividend here is $3.44. So the dividend yield on this stock is pretty respectable. You buy a share of this stock at $130.88, you're going to get a $3.44 check in the mail, which means that your dividend is about 2.6% of what you paid. You get back like a rebate every year. So that's a nice thing, good news kind of stock, a little bit weak on the volume, and you can see that it took a big tumble in the first wave of the bear market. And of course, it's going to move about 150% as hard as the market itself does, with a beta of 1.55. So there you are. And the EPS, it's obviously this is a profitable stock, Caterpillar is. Okay, so moving ahead here, the one thing is, well, I could look at these financials. If you're a professional, or if you want to behave like a professional, you don't look at those financials. Those are a secondary source. Everything that is provided on sites like Yahoo Finance, Google, even sources like Morningstar, S&P 500, S&P Net Advantage, those are secondary sources of the numbers. The primary source is SEC.gov. The filings of the company. Those are what the company has sent to the SEC. They are signed, these documents are signed by the company's officers and directors. So if they lie on these, if there's a mistake on these that's material, there is a possibility of prison for the executive. So this is where the original, the primary source is. Whenever you want to find out about a company, somewhere in here, you'll get your information. And that's also something good to know if you're going out for an interview for a job or an internship, a career, a job or an internship. You go to the SEC's filings, read the 10K, read the 10Qs. Don't go back too far, just read the current ones. You're going to find out what's going on with that company. And then when you're in that interview, you can ask questions that are a lot more intelligent, a lot more informed than almost anyone else who's going to interview for that job because you read the company's sworn statements filed with the United States government. That's a strong point in your favor. at an interview. Using the fast search, CAT, C-A-T, here we are. All of the documents that that have to be filed by a public company. Now, I'm going to bring up a few here. You see, first thing that might strike you, what is the thing that's noticeable in here? If you're looking over here on the far left column, what's the form that seems to be so uniform? Madam, as you yawn, what do you see? What do you see up there? What form just seems to be all over the place here? 8Ks. That's an interesting thing. Even in itself, just seeing that many 8Ks, it kind of tells me something. I'll have to look in one of them here. But generally speaking, 8Ks are non-recurring event notifications. Notices that are provided to the public through the SEC of something that doesn't happen on a normal basis or on a periodic basis. The 8K could be anything from the death of the CEO to an explosion at a major factory or something like that. Or it could be a press release. I'm going to be curious to see why they are filing so many 8Ks. But looking here, SC-13G, that is a notification that they gave stock to someone. You have just become the CEO of Caterpillar. As part of your compensation package, they give you options so you can get stock at cheapo prices, Caterpillar stock at cheapo prices. So they are going to give you stock in Caterpillar by virtue of the fact that you've become one of the officers of the company. Now, you're a shareholder, just a normal, everyday shareholder. Why does that impact you? Why do you care about the directors giving him some stock?
Because it affects my money.
Be specific.
Well, if I'm a shareholder, whatever decisions he makes.
Well, there's that. You're right about that, absolutely. No question. There's a much more important thing, though, that goes on immediately. What you're talking about is the long run important. The short run is that, you see, when you own stock in a company, that gives you a percent of ownership. Say if there are 1 million shares and you own 100,000, you're a 10% owner. But if they give him stock, that waters down your ownership position. He has their decision to give him stock impacts you by reducing your control over the company, your position. So that is something that matters to us. Okay, they're putting other people in stock, equity, and that means that my ownership percentage of the company necessarily falls as a result of that. So that SC-13G is important to me. That slash A is an amendment. Apparently there was an original one that they screwed up something with. Going down through here, the 11K is an annual report. It's an AR, and it also talks about employee stock option plans, giving the employees a chance to get stock in a company, and that's a wonderful thing, letting the employees feel like they are empowered. Giving them a false sense of empowerment is wonderful. But those 8Ks, I am a little concerned before I even bother to look at them. Let's have a look at one of them. Documents. Now, the top one will be the paper itself, the core document. The rest are exhibits, like pictures, graphs, charts, stuff like that. They're all as hyperlinks in this one right here, the top one, the .html. Caterpillar, 8K, current report. You know, like in my time, they would have allowed us to use pretty little pictures like that. Okay, check the appropriate box. Here we go. On January 28, 2019, Caterpillar issued a press release. Oh, they put out a press release. Okay, that was one of the 8Ks. Let's see what this 8K is. Oh, that's an oddball creature right there. Let's try this one. On December, informed the company of his intention to retire. Okay, that might be something interesting. Let's see what else we got going on here. Let's grab this one. Caterpillar is furnishing supplemental information concerning retail sales of machines and other stuff. Caterpillar has the majority of its machinery. Okay, it's letting people know that it didn't tell them everything the first time. See what this one is. Just very quickly, I'm going through. Filing an amendment to an 8K filed with a typographical error. Okay, they're sloppy. Whatever. Caterpillar is furnishing supplemental information. Those are earnings calls. Okay. I'm suspicious when you see that many 8Ks. They're pouring 8Ks. There's too much not usual stuff going on for my taste, but that's just me. Now, let me get their 10K. We'll get to that. But okay. Start out. Let's see. Sir, you who intellectually stroke at the beard to show that you're contemplating important matters beyond this class. You're what, in your early 20s perhaps?
Yeah.
Okay, bright, future is wonderful, everything's good. You see, I'm working very hard to get you to the point where you'll be prepared to be a cynical old son of a bitch like I am. You see, by the time you get to a little later, there's no such thing as good news. There's bad news that has not shown itself as bad news yet. So when I look at these, look, everyone can be positive about the world. The great things are in the world aren't what kill you. It's the bad things. So the more you suspicious you are, the better it is for your survival, and especially in the stock market. So I take all these 8Ks as 8K dump. They're just pouring. For some reason, they want the attention. They're getting things out there. They're doing earnings calls. They're doing press releases. That is not my cup of tea. I'm not really thrilled about it. But anyway, going to the 10K. This is the core document setup. And I'm going to look at the interactive so I can see the financial statements. Now, remember, you can download these as an Excel. Massive, many, many tab. You'll get every bit of information, financial information about the company if you download the Excel document. I can also just look at them online here, which is what I'm going to do for the purposes tonight here, just to have a look at them, expose you to their financial statements, and then have a quick analysis so that you can see how a financial statement differs from what we need to know in finance. The first thing right off the bat is that there is no standard name for a lot of financial statements like there used to be. We used to call it the income statement. Now it can have different names. You'll see me actually looking around, where the heck is the one I'm looking for? What do they call it? Here they call it the consolidated statement of operations. That's an income statement. Informally, we used to call them P&Ls or profit and loss statements. It's an income statement. They call it the consolidated statement of operations. You see that you'll get 3 years here. If you want more, just go to the 10K document itself. You'll get more years there if you want more years for trend analysis or something like that. The next thing is, just on a technical level, they report their cost of goods sold, but they don't report the line right under it, which we are actually rather interested in that line under it, which is gross profit. So in other words, below that line, total sales and revenue, minus cost of goods sold, you would want to include a line that is this minus this, called the gross income, or sometimes it's called the gross profit. We need to know that. That number will tell us how much of every dollar you sold survived the cost of the wholesale cost. Cost of goods sold is money that you spend that is directly related to the product itself. And that means, so in my business, as I've told you before, I sell a work of art for $800. But I have a frame, the glass, the mat, the dry mount, the hooks on the back, the wire and all that. That, I can say, that money was directly into that thing I sold there. Say it's $200, so it's 800 minus 200, so 600 survived the cost of the thing itself to get it out the door. Wonderful, okay. But there are other costs too. Now, interestingly enough, if it's a service company, there will not be a cost of goods sold line. So, back to you, sir. You run a male escort business.
Okay.
And, I mean, there is no cost of goods sold. The product is a service. Okay? So you have no growth. Your revenue is your gross. Okay? You follow that?
Yeah.
Good. So, in other words, we look at some companies that are service related. And then there's a nasty one where there's a company that has some parts of it are service related and some parts of it are product related. And so that cost of goods sold line kind of is misstating things because you think that's all attributable, that COGS is all up there in the revenue somewhere. No, only part of it is. Amazon, for example, is actually not really a product company at all. You understand that? You see that? Amazon is not a product company. It's a service company. You go to Amazon, you go there for the product, but that's not what they're selling you. They're selling you Amazon. The delivery of the product, the experience of finding products online in a rapid fashion, that means that, yeah, go ahead. Well, there you go. That was where I was getting to. You see that there are things, like, for example, I was surprised that Amazon sells under its own label. Now, it doesn't make them, obviously. It's buying them at a wholesale price from China or somewhere. But it sells a number of what they call Amazon Basic products. And so it's a nasty thing because you've got a cost of goods sold line there, but that really is more of a service company than it is a product company. So you got to be careful with that line. But things get nasty right below that. See this research and development expenses? I don't know what they mean by that. And I would have to research that somewhat. But what's really troubling is that I don't see a depreciation line. And I know darn well it's in there somewhere. They've embedded it in selling, general, and administrative, research and development expenses. I don't know where it is, but I know darn well it's there someplace. So that is of some concern to me because I need to know that depreciation line because that depreciation line means nothing whatsoever. Once I get down to actually calculating what matters, cash flow, I have to add the depreciation back in. I don't see it there. It's not showing. So I've got to go somewhere else and hope I can find that stupid thing because depreciation doesn't exist. I have never, in my own business, ever written a check to depreciation. Paid to the order of depreciation. There's no such thing. You see, because in the real world of business, when we make a capital expenditure, in other words, an expenditure for something that lasts more than a year, usually something that's darned expensive, we're not allowed to put that expense on the income statement. We have to chop it up into 3 years, 5 years, 7 years, 20 years. We're not allowed to show what really happened. You, madam, spent $4,500. Wouldn't it be nice if you could put that as an expense on your income statement? Yeah, you're not allowed to. I wasn't allowed to. I just last year spent $4,500. I'm not allowed to put that on there. I have to break that up into 5 years and put a part of it each year for 5 years. So in other words, what I put on there, say $900 if I were straight line depreciating. There's no $900 that happened. There is no $900 anywhere that happened. But I have to put that on there as a lie. And then the rest of it goes into my balance sheet as the truth. So I am overstating my cash flow by subtracting only depreciation. So when I get down to doing cash flow, I have to add back the depreciation and then subtract out the full-blown capital expenditure that actually came out of my pocket. Am I the only one who sees that thing vibrating? I mean, from here, every time I look at it, I want to hurl and twitch. It's making my shoulder ache. No, do you see it? It vibrates. Wow, okay. Okay. So where am I going to go? Over here. Look, see, there it is. Depreciation and amortization, $2.877 billion. Well, thank goodness we found it somewhere, because that was what was in this previous statement right here, but it was hidden. My suspicion is that it was somewhere, it's in SG&A. It was hidden in there. They put that in there. Fortunately, in the statement of cash flows, you can see what the number was itself. Anyway, once we get to the bottom line, we have to add back that thing I just saw there on the statement of cash flows. And then we have to subtract out what really happened as far as capital expenditures go. Very quickly, when I say money, I'm talking about funds that have been used or have occurred in less than a year. If I say capital, I'm talking about long-term funds that have been acquired for a long period of time for something that will last a long time, hopefully. So in other words, revenue is money because it happens right away. Paying your salary, like I really will, that's money. But if I borrow, say on a 20-year bond from lenders, that's a capital. That's capital. That's a capital inflow. It will last for 20 years. I'll pay it off over 20 years. If I sell you stock, sir, you're an owner forever. Unless, you know, you sell it to someone else. But the stock will be there forever. That's capital coming in. I am raising capital by borrowing, by issuing bonds. I'm raising capital by selling stock in the corporation. Okay, so when I say capital expenditure, I'm referring to those big 800-pound gorillas that we're not allowed to expense on the income statement. Okay, now, flogging this down the line, we get down here. If you take your gross income minus your operating costs, your lights, your salaries, your depreciation, all that kind of stuff, you get operating profit. Now, make sure you understand that that can be set, have other names. Operating profit, operating income, earnings before interest and taxes, EBIT. They can, and even some weird twists. I was just staring at it was last year, right in this room. They had a name for operating income that was sort of a variation on earnings before interest and taxes, but it was such a variation, just enough of a twist that I couldn't see it with my eyes right away. Okay. Now, once we get to this line right here, that's operating profit. That's how much money has survived paying your wholesalers and paying your light bills and your advertising and all that kind of stuff and taking out your depreciation. Now, then comes the next step, 531. The operating income, otherwise known as earnings before interest and taxes, we then take out our interest payments, what we owe our long-term debt holders. And in this case, we had $4,406. And that, from that, we paid our interest of $531 million. Now, I'm going to pull up a calculator, and I'm going to do a quick first ratio. I'm using a scientific. I'm going to look here, and I see, okay, $4,406 million was available divided by the $531 million in interest we had to pay. In other words, Caterpillar was able to cover its interest 8.3 times over. That's good. Okay, first things first. Why do I get very excitedly concerned the closer that gets to one? Why would I start barking like a dog if that number were less than one? Any idea? Why, madam, would I freak if I took operating income divided by interest expense and I got a number that was less than one? Say it. No, I'd be bankrupt. Yeah, because I would not be able to pay my interest. If that operating profit is not enough to pay my interest, what happens? What happens next? If I owe you interest on a loan, and I say I don't have the money to pay that, what do you do to me?
I could sue you.
No. You turn me off. You just shut me down. The debt holders, if you do not pay them what you owe them, they will shoot your dog, sell your Bible on Craigslist, and make your parents do very strange dances for them. That's how serious it is. If you don't pay your interest, that's the end of your company. The debt holders just go to a court and they say, turn off the lights right now. And then the company screams and it runs to a bankruptcy protection attorney and says, tell the court, hold off, we'll figure out something. But right away, you're done, right there. So you don't want that number to be really close to one. You definitely don't want it to go below one because that says the company is done. That's the end of the game, game over, lights out. So the higher the better, but not necessarily. You see, that actually, it depends on the industry. Different industries have different okay times interest earns. 8.3 is actually kind of like a not bad for almost anything. But I don't want that number to be too high. I don't want that number for a company. I don't want a company that makes 25 times what it owes, what it pays in interest. I don't want a company that does not use debt. I am very concerned when a company has a policy. Well, we don't borrow money, we just earn money, and we, if we need more money, we sell more stock in the company because neither a debt borrower nor a lender be. I don't want to see a company like that, and I will put a sell on that company. And there's a reason for that. Okay. Were you taught in any of your business courses so far the three-letter abbreviation OPM? OPM. Well, I'm sure you haven't. Yes, ma'am? Yes. You magnify the return on equity by using other people's money. That sounds like a joke. It is not a joke. And it might be on Wednesday. I don't know if I'll have the time. I will show you how you can become a millionaire using OPM. Now, on the other hand, you can go bankrupt, but that's okay because all you do if you're a corporation, if you go bankrupt, you just say, okay, my bad. You screw the investors and you start a new company and declare yourself a business genius. I won't mention, but that's how it's done. See, if you know how to do it smart, you use other people's money. If you win, you win massively on what's called gains to leverage. If you lose, you're losing their money. Yeah, they're going to bitch at you. But at the same time, who cares? Well, unless they, you know, they like have guns and that, you know. But that's actually not a joke. There is no joke involved, OPM. So when I see a company that has very little interest expense against pre-interest income, I'm asking myself, why are you not borrowing more money to magnify the return on equity? Because that's exactly what happens when you borrow money. Think, if there is unlimited potential for growth in a company, 10%, 20%, 30%, 40%, but you are using money that has a fixed cost, 5%, 6%, 8%, then anything you make above the fixed is yours as the owners. So I keep an eye on that. That's one of my ones I keep an eye on. Companies that avoid borrowing money, yes, it creates risk, but that risk is a calculated risk. Your life is a calculated risk unless you stay in the basement and eat Cheetos and play World of Warcraft. Which is, you know, I'm not criticizing that lifestyle. Hell, we need vegetables, but in our diet. Okay, now, that's harsh, isn't it? Yes. Sad world when you have people watching people play video games and paying money to do so. Whew. Anyway, enough of that. Okay, now. Once we've gotten that out of the way, consolidated profit before taxes. Oftentimes you'll hear me call that EBT, earnings before taxes. The next line is a little bit of a nasty. Your provision for income taxes. That is not necessarily what they actually paid. That's a provision for it. And it is also a number that really doesn't tell the whole story. One problem you have in this one, you'll hear me go after conservatives. Here's one for the liberals when they start breathlessly squawking, this company paid no taxes for the last one. Oh, shut up. You know, you don't know. By looking at that number, you might see a zero there. That means nothing. The company might actually have tax loss carryforwards, things like that. So that number, you have to take that. We can fix that. We can adjust that. And I'll show you how we adjust that to get cash flow in just a few minutes. But always take what's happening here on this income statement with kind of a grain of salt. Because it's saying things that are necessary by the rules of accounting, but it's not telling the whole story. And the whole story begins to unfold, and it's rather more interesting. But I want to go down here. When you look at the profit, that can be called net income. It can be called earnings. In this one, it's called profit or loss, and they had a profit of $754 million, okay? So it's a profitable company, so, madam, that's wonderful, right? Profit means great. No. Do you remember my story about the donut shop? Okay, I got a deal for you. We're on the second floor. If you will go up to the fourth floor with me, it's actually above the fourth floor. You see those gables over this building that kind of stick out? I can get us to those, and I can open the window. If you'll jump out that fifth floor, actually, window, I'll give you $1.
Yes, I don't know.
What do you mean? It's $1. You most certainly can. The value meal at Wendy's. Oh, and don't forget apple empanada at Taco Bell. Yeah. Look, Christmas time, I go to a Dollar Tree. $10, 10 gifts.
What about packages? Nine gifts.
You're right about that. I mean, you know, but that one nephew, he's such a brat. It's okay. Okay, you ready? Let's go. Top, top. Woman, here's the thing, though. You see, the thing is that it has to do with the risk. I mean, you know, if I told you just step on that step and I'll give you $1, you'd probably do it, right? But if you're going to jump four floors, five floors, I mean, how do you know if you're going to bounce? Or you know, just go, okay? So you see, there's the issue of risk. What risk was associated with that profit? You'll have many companies, they say, we made a big profit last quarter, here it is, and the stock price just goes whoa, down into the floor because that profit was insufficient for the level of risk that was taken by the buyers of the stock. That's the reality of it. Just because you made money, don't come to me and expect me to give you a slap on the ass. I do that for free. But bottom line is, you see, that a positive number doesn't impress me at all. You've got to be cynical. What was the risk of that profit? Was that return commensurate with the risk that the company took? Now, the next line here is the earnings per share. That's the profit divided by the number of shares outstanding. Now, there are two numbers there. The basic, okay, there's a company. I have a company. It's got 1 million shares outstanding. So that's the basic. You take the 754 divided by 1 million. But suppose you, madam, are my new CEO, and I've given you options on 100,000 shares of stock. So you haven't exercised them, so they're not out there as outstanding. But if they do get exercised, there would be 1,100,000 shares. That would be the diluted. So in other words, the difference between the basic and the diluted is the diluted includes shares that have not become outstanding, but they could because of options, warrants, whatever. That's what that means. In most cases, it is not significant. When I see the number basic and fully diluted far apart, that gets me a little bit excited because that means that there's a lot of stock that's not out there yet. But when it goes out there, that's going to water down the amount of stock that my ownership position. And that also means that if that gets exercised, that stock comes out there, the supply of the stock in the market goes up, and when supply goes up, price goes down. So I kind of keep an eye on that. The numbers are also there in the balance sheet, the number of shares outstanding, the number of shares that could be outstanding. It's in the balance sheet there in the owner's equity section. But it's something to keep, just kind of keep an eye on. Now, here's something. That $1.27. Got a $1.27. You got one share of stock. Okay, that $1.27 belongs to you because that is the residual money. I've paid all the debt holders. They're the ones who have to be paid first. They're their prior claim. So that $1.27 is all yours. No. You see, I can do... Concentrate, boy, for God's sake. money is his, but I have the fiduciary responsibility to decide what to do with that money. You see, I could give it to him as a dividend, or I could give him some of it as a dividend, but I can also use that money to put back into the company on your behalf. Because if I give it to you, it's gone forever from me. But if I keep it and reinvest it in the company, then the company might grow and your stock price might go up. There's a risk in that. If I give you a dividend, it's yours. No risk. But if I put it back into the company, I guarantee you I might fail, might screw up, but I also might make the company do better because I didn't have to go out and borrow money. I had this money that was yours. And I'm doing what's right for you in my judgment. Okay, so that's a trade-off. It's very difficult to decide in some cases. Young companies almost always just put all the money back into the company. No dividend. I told you the story of that. It's just the reality of how it works. Okay, however, let me go back over here just for something. Have you ever heard of Jell-O shots? Okay, I'm just going to look at this for shots and jiggles. That did not go over. You know, Jell-O, you know, and shot. The hell with it. Ha ha ha! Guffaws! Rough crowd, rough crowd. Is there something there that's kind of unusual? Let me take you back. What was that earnings per share? What was it? $1.27. Is there something up there that's rather noticeable? In those numbers that I'm showing you there for Caterpillar, do you notice something? If you don't, don't worry about it. It's, give you a hint. Look at forward dividend. What's the forward dividend, the dividend they're going to pay next per share? Madam, do you see it? What's the dividend per share they're going to pay next?
3.44.
Not 3.44, no. That's money. Say it in money.
The 2.44%.
No, say money. 3.44, say that as a money.
3 million?
No, how about $3.44? Oh, okay. You're looking at me like, why did you tell me to say that, fat boy? Flap, flap, flap. It's $3.44. Yeah, okay. Okay, what did you say the earnings per share were?
$3.
No, the earnings per share. That's the dividend. $1.27. How much do the shareholders have per share? $1.27. How much are they going to give the shareholders as a dividend per share? $3.44. Do you notice that there's a problem with that? You see any problem with that? I made you $1.27. And I'm going to give you $3.44. Do you see anything that might be a little bit screwed up about that at all? They earn for the shareholders $1.27, so they're going to give the shareholders a dividend of $3.44. Anything wrong at all with that? Yeah, that's insane. They are going to give the shareholders almost three times as much as they earned for the shareholders. They're giving the shareholders money that they didn't make for them. That's insane. That's madness. But they're doing it again. Right here. This is what they made for each shareholder per share. $1.27 is what they made for each shareholder per share. This is what they're going to give each shareholder in cash per share. They made the shareholder, they have $1.27 to give the shareholders, so hell, they're going to give them $3.44 per share. That's madness. Why in the heaven would they do that? They're basically, they're borrowing money or something, or they're selling stock or something to get the money to give the shareholders candy that they don't can't afford to pay for. Why would you do that? Why would you? They're doing something that's ridiculous. Why would you do that? Is there any logic to it? You see any reason, ma'am? Why you would do that? Well, there is a reason. See, the problem is that once you start paying dividends, you have to keep paying them. That's something that I've cautioned companies. Well, is it time for us to start paying a dividend? Well, once you do, you're in the program. Because if you stop paying a dividend, the markets will just spank you because you just told them you can't pay a dividend. You're giving them an open channel so that when if things go bad, they hear you say, uh-oh. The other thing is that once you start paying a dividend, it's not enough to just keep paying that dividend. You have to grow that dividend to show that your company is always doing better and better. We as investment analysts will slaughter a company's rating if the company does not keep growing its dividend and get stable with a dividend, predictable dividend growth rate. That's just what we'll do. So Caterpillar is in a position where it really can't afford not to keep doing this. It can't afford to admit we are in so much trouble that we can't do this anymore. If they back off that dividend, I guarantee you that stock price would just collapse. If they paid $1.27, every penny that they made for the shareholders, if they paid every penny of that to the shareholders, that stock price would probably end up being around 45 to 50, maybe 60. If they, it's just the reality of it. So not only are they, don't they have any, are they're making $1.27 per share. They're blowing all of that money and twice as much more to give to the shareholders, which means that there ain't any money that they have to reinvest from the shareholders. They're giving it all to the shareholders plus two times more, almost. That's a bad sign right there. Something is really wrong. Now, we go through the meat grinder here a little bit. Let me go over here. I want you to look at the balance sheet. It's not called, some call a balance sheet, this one called a statement of financial position. Now, if you want more than 2 years, just go into the 10K, copy and paste a table from the 10K. It's there. Okay, now. Here's where cash bleeds out of a company. Really, this is where the cash actually comes in or bleeds out. Notice that the cash position itself went up by about $1.1 billion. That's interesting, but let's not worry about that right now. The first thing that's going to worry me here is that the receivables went up by about $1.5 billion. The receivables went up by $1.5 billion. That is blood flow of cash. You see, because, just give you an example of my business. Last year, I sold about $2,000 of artwork on credit to people. Okay? You can't pay me now, pay me later. Well, you know what? That $2,000 shows up in my revenue. Oh man, you really did well. You sold $2,000. I did not. But I have to report it as revenue. I pay taxes on it as revenue. But I don't have that. So my accounts receivable went up by $2,000. So that means that that's actually less on my revenue than what the accountants say. In other words, when current assets go up, that means I'm bleeding cash. Another one, see inventory. Look at the inventory there. Their inventory went up by about $1.4 billion. Okay, wonderful, great. But that's blood flowing out of cash in my business. Okay, I spent probably about $3,000 on new inventory. I don't get to put that on my expenses unless I sell that artwork. And in my business, literally, most of my work won't even be sold before I'm dead. And so, in other words, it shows up as an increase in inventory, but there's no expense. It's not in cost of goods sold. It's not in the operating expenses. It's just sitting there. So when inventory goes up, that's actually blood flow of cash. It's real money out of my pocket that I'm not allowed to put anywhere but on the balance sheet. So every time one of those current assets goes up, that represents cash flow disappearing that was on the revenues that I have to take away from the revenues to represent correctly what cash flow is. The opposite is true for liabilities, current liabilities. You, sir, work for me. I owe you. Yeah, I owe you. Ain't gonna pay you, but I owe you. See, I owe you $1,000 for last month's work that you did for me. Well, I'm going to represent that $1,000 as an expense. But if I don't pay it to you, it goes on my wages payable. So when that wages payable goes up, that's cash inflow. In other words, I took it away on my income statement, but it never went away. So I have to add in to cash flow, positive cash flow, anytime a current liability goes up. Pay as late as you can. Get your money as soon as you can. Old, old, old saying. You know, I'll pay you later. You pay me now. That's just the reality of it. So in this case, Caterpillar, can you see all those categories in the current assets that went up? Their receivables went up, even their trade payable, trade receivables. Their prepaid expenses went up. Their inventories went up. That's cash flowing out of the company because I represented revenues that did not happen. Hell, I represented where the heck is the total current liabilities? Okay. Now, if I look there, accrued wages, that one, see the accrued wages there, salaries and employee, they postponed, they nearly doubled the amount of money they postponed paying employees. That's cash in their pocket because they said on their income statement they actually paid it. That balance sheet is saying they didn't pay it. They didn't pay a large amount of it, which is really troublesome to me. But, let me show you what I'm talking about. Net working capital is current assets minus current liabilities. So, in the case of Caterpillar, 2017 versus 2016, current assets, current liabilities. 2017 current assets survey says 36,244. For 2016, current assets were 31,967. 2017 current assets were, I'm sorry, current liabilities in 2017 were 1975 against current liabilities for the year previous were 1635. So net working capital, if I hammer that out really quickly here, that would be 36, can someone read that? 3624. Wait a minute. What the heck? Oh, I was putting the wrong current liabilities. That's 26,931. I'm sorry. Yeah, I was reading the wrong line. And the current liabilities was 26,132. I apologize for that. Okay, now let me do this again. Read that number to me, the current assets, 2017. Okay, minus, what were the current liabilities? $9,313 for networking capital, 2017. And then 31, I'm just testing you. 967 less 26,132. 5,835, is that what you get? 5,835. So now, here's what matters. The change in net working capital. If it's positive, you've bled cash. If it's negative, you've infused cash. So in other words, change in net working capital is net working capital for the current period less net working capital for the period previous. In this case, it would be 9,313 less 5,835. Oh, wait, let me clear this. I'm screwing it up. 9,313 less 5,835. 3,478. God, that's blood flow. That's cash that has vanished into the balance sheet. That is not on the income statement. That's not in the profit. That's a negative. That's a minus in the calculation of the cash flow, because that's money that has vanished, that is said to be in the revenue, that is not in the revenue. That's why we can't use those accounting statements, because they don't tell us what really happened, why Caterpillar is struggling and suffering. I mean, there are other things. You see, we've got to give them back their depreciation, because that wasn't real and they subtracted out. But then we have to subtract what they really spent on capital equipment, which could be a massive amount of money. So we've got these things, and then you've got a few others. But I mean, this is the picture, the actual picture of the company, not the story that is told in the children's book. This is why we in finance, because we have to invest based upon what really is happening, not on what's happening in a rule book. Madam, are you an accounting major? Good. Okay. In accounting, I know you took 131 and 132, right? Now, did you sit on the edge of your seat excited? Oh, yeah, there's a debit. Oh, look at that. Oh, golly, Ned. And you, credit, yeah. Boy, I can use those in my life. God damn. That's not what you did. Here, we actually have insane trading. Billions and billions of shares every week. Trillions of dollars. Because of these numbers, not because of the accounting numbers, these numbers. That's why I talk the way I do about the accounting numbers. We have to have them, we can use them, but they ain't the story. Cash flow. not profit. Now, this is actually not the complete story, but we can start by taking the accountant's net income number, and then we start putting it, taking it apart and putting it back together again. It's actually not that hard until you start getting into the deep analysis, and that you would do if you were to take a course like my 341 or my 242. You get into that more, but this is good enough. We have to add back the depreciation and amortization that they were told they have to take out, because that didn't really happen. No one wrote a check to depreciation, pay the order of depreciation. It didn't happen. It's only a piece of what really happened. So we add back what they subtracted, and then we subtract what really happened, the capital expenditures. In my company, I spent $4,500 last year. Straight line, all I was allowed was $900 of it. So in order to see what really happened, I have to take that income statement that I file for my taxes, that I show to investors, and I have to add the $900 back and then subtract what really went out of my pocket. It was my back pocket, so I guess it's okay for me to say what really came out of my ass. And then that right there, we have to subtract the cash that didn't happen that we said happened in the financial statements. You see, Caterpillar had about $3.5 billion that vanished from the company's revenues that were never on debt, on net, that didn't get accounted in the income statement. We have to put it back in. When we do this, we often, many times, see the companies that are talked about, well, they pulled a profit, ha, ha, ha. They are near death. I was on this message board explaining a few important concepts about some good investments and bad investments, and I pointed out Tesla's in a very great deal of difficulty, and some incredibly ignorant dumbass said, well, Tesla posted a profit for the last two quarters. I say it's a buy. No, it's not, you imbecile, because he was looking at profit. It was so far outside of his understanding that he couldn't even grasp what I was trying to explain to these interested investors about cash flow and how you look at that. So you're in this position now where you can understand cash flow. Matter of fact, I'll do Caterpillar's cash flow next time. And I'll show you a couple of other ones that are profitable companies. You hear good things about them. But when you go and look underneath, the cash flow is insanely negative. But that's the next time. That's all I have for you tonight. I thank you.